What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
Hey, this is George Duke on Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop.
Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. We are live in the city of Austin, Texas. And we want to talk to you this afternoon about something that should be top of mind to anybody who encounters the police. We're talking about tasers. That is the supposed non-lethal weapon that has been favored by the police when it comes to subduing people who they feel are incorrigible, out of control, potential threat, etc., etc. The big problem that we're running into is that these tasers, more often than not, seem to be a fatal weapon that takes more lives than actual police shootings. This past week and a half, San Jose lost its sixth person at the hands of police using a taser. I believe his name is Richard Lua. San Jose also, well, we recently saw a $1.4 million verdict, the only loss that has been handed to the people who make tasers and a wrongful death. We also know that over the weekend, during the NBA All-Star game, tasers were used on a number of people, including the infamous fight between Suge Knight and Akon's people. People that were witness to that event said that the police came in and started shooting everybody with tasers. Didn't matter if you were involved or not. And so we wanted to talk to somebody who's an expert in this, who's been following this. Her name is Debbie Russell. She's an activist here in Austin, Texas, and she's been on the front line dealing with tasers. First of all, Debbie, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks, Davey.
Talk a little bit about the situation with tasers. Was I on the wrong path when I said that more often than not, it seems to be causing death as opposed to subduing people and saving lives?
You are, yes and no. It definitely, we're hearing way too many deaths for something that's supposedly a non-lethal weapon. They do use tasers a lot on a daily basis, and I'm actually concerned about the rate of use in San Jose for, I guess you consider that a mid-sized city, that the death rate and the usage rate compares to Houston, to New York, to L.A. It doesn't compare to other mid-sized cities. This is very concerning.
San Jose, I think on average, tases 200 people a year. Is that an unusual number?
That's actually about average for the mid to large cities. You'll see anywhere from, say, one taser usage every 1 to 3 days at a department. If they were using their gun that much, wouldn't people be up in arms? Now, tasers are obviously potentially lethal. People are dying. So many advocates feel that the taser should be bumped up to right next to, if not alongside, the gun as last resort.
What has been happening? First of all, why do we have the number of deaths? We mentioned since 2005, city of San Jose has had 5. Here in Texas, where you're at, there's been a number of troubling deaths. I'm not sure of the numbers, but obviously it got you on the case. And then we keep hearing about it over and over again, different parts of the country, even different parts of the world. And they seem to just come up far too often with people who probably didn't have to have a taser used against them. You know, one of the things that kind of stands out is the Oscar Grant situation, where, you know, for people outside of the Bay Area, Grant was a young man killed in the wee hours of New Year's morning after being subdued, and this cop went for his gun and shot him point blank while he was being held with his arms behind his back and an officer on his neck. The story that we keep hearing is that the officer was reaching for his taser, as if that was somehow better. And it raises the question, taser or gun, why would you have to use that? And what's the point of using the tasers?
Well, certainly as far as best practices are concerned, even from law enforcement standpoint, using a taser when somebody's already handcuffed, already in custody, is definitely a no-no. And the law enforcement officials from nationwide associations, from the unions even, are saying that they should not allow that by policy. So the fact that they're defaulting to this upper level of force and not using the least force necessary shows us we have either poorly trained officers, or we have perhaps a lot of racism seeping through still to this day in law enforcement, or perhaps there's just a laziness about it all, that they're defaulting to the upper end so they don't even have to bother trying to get people under control if they're not already by using the least force necessary.
You said that there might be a racial component. Explain, but what do you mean by that?
Well, if you look at the numbers, Taser is used in different numbers I've seen anywhere from 80% to 85% of the time on African Americans in this country. That's an astounding figure. I think that's even higher than gun deaths. So the fact that they're using that so much on one population, and I'm not even including Hispanics in that, which are greater in numbers than African Americans, something is definitely wrong. Something is very, very wrong. And it's been just from a medical standpoint. I'm not a doctor, but there are concerns from the medical community because who they're being used on most are young African-American males between 20 and 40 years of age, and that's who has the highest rate of heart problems in this country. So what we know of Taser and what we're seeing is that people are dying, especially when they're tasering them more than one time or using more than one taser, and they're dying for a variety of unknown reasons that aren't being explored on purpose by policy, by practice, and because Taser International is such a corrupt company that they're coming in and preemptively suing people to prevent them from doing the stories and the medical studies that are necessary.
Okay, we've been talking with Debbie Russell. We're here in Austin, Texas. She's an activist here who's been dealing with Taser deaths that seem to be happening all around the country. We're looking at the recent situation that took place in San Jose last week. Gentleman by the name, 28-year-old, I guess his name was Richard Lua, was tased to death by San Jose police. In this case, they say that Lua went for the gun. What was interesting in the story, as you pointed out in many other stories, they don't tell you how many times he's tased. What's the significance of knowing the number of times tased, and why does that seem to be a number that comes out after the fact and not the day of or the day after when a taser death occurs?
Well, the police perspective is they want to do the full investigation before they release the details. But, of course, from a public relations perspective, hiding it means they have a better chance of it never becoming uncovered because people don't know to dig for that. It's very important because if you look at the list of taser deaths, you'll see that a high percentage of them are from being tasered more than once. Taser delivers a 5-second shock, which incapacitates your muscles completely. But it can be more than 5 seconds. They can re-trigger. There's no limit on it. They can continue to pull the trigger, or they can hold it down and continue to deliver that electroshock. It's a poorly designed weapon that Amnesty International and others have said time and again. We need a moratorium on this weapon, not only because of its poor design, because of the lack of the studies.
And so when we talk about the reason why people need to know how many times folks get tased is because, obviously, if this is happening multiple times, but and usually by other officers, so you might have one or two or three, this increases the chances of injury.
Yeah, and one of the biggest problems is not so much how many times or how long the charge is delivered to the body, but how you're positioned. A lot of the deaths you see, the person down on the ground already, and perhaps officers, you know, with their knees on the back. When they're compressed like that, their lungs are compressed, they can't get air to their lungs because their muscles aren't working to be able to get air through their lungs. So that's actually another element in which people die, is they basically suffocate to death.
So let's go back to the Oscar Grant situation. Here we have an officer who has his knee on his neck, and let's just say the other officer, Mezzoli, was to have pulled the taser, then this is usually how somebody's dying, because he's already has pressure on him from behind.
Right. In this situation, it would not be recommended, according to best practices developed by the Police Chiefs Association in accordance with Amnesty International. A lot of groups have gotten together, and it's already starting to define policy, but that would not be best practice. That would, in many cities, be a violation of their policy.
You know, when I read the stories about taser death, including the one in San Jose, what we hear is that he got tased once and he still was moving. The recent use of tasers during the NBA All-Star Weekend, there were a number of tasers that were used on quote-unquote rowdy crowds. But, you know, the one that hasn't really been reported more is the taser incident because of the celebrity of the people fighting, Suge Knight and Akon's bodyguard or what have you. From what we're told is that the police came in and shot multiple tasers. They shot it in the person who was arrested. They shot it at Suge. They shot it at the other folks. So, you know, it was just a taser frenzy and people jumping under chairs and all that. So you had multiple tasers being used. And again, what's implied is that people are out of control and they needed these extra, you know, voltages to subdue them. How accurate can that be?
Actually, the taser, poorly designed as it is, to randomly and just fire all over the place like that is just a very poor use of the weapon, because there's two probes that come out and they have to be a certain distance apart. They can't be too far apart and they can't be too close together. They fail time and again when that happens. You don't hear a lot of those stories, but there's a high failure rate with tasers. So when those probes are deployed, they have to hit in the right place in the body. You're not supposed to hit, according to best practices and many policies, but perhaps not in San Jose, you're not supposed to hit people in the arms or the face or the groin area. You're supposed to hit them in the body cavity. So if they're just shooting them all over the place like that, they're putting a whole lot of people in danger. A probe can take an eye out, and literally it has completely blinded and incapacitated people.
You mentioned earlier that the main manufacturers of tasers have taken up on an unusual strategy of going out and suing people who are reporting stories, which is usually the other way around. Talk a little bit about this and what sort of chilling effect has it had?
It's had an extremely chilling effect. Robert Anglin of the Arizona Republic has been the premier reporter nationwide to cover tasers. He stopped for a long time. He's actually picked back up and done a story or two recently, but he was doing some of the best research and digging to date, because they're actually located in Scottsdale, Arizona, so he's right there on their home turf. It is unprecedented to sue people to prevent studies and stories from going forth. It is definitely a violation of the First Amendment, and any court, any judge that would rule in Taser's favor, there has to be questioned and should be taken to task for that. The other thing that they're doing that's not so unprecedented but is just so blatant I can't even believe they're getting away with it is they are hosting medical examiner conferences in Canada and in the United States. In Canada, they hired as a moonlighting job the equivalent of the surgeon general there, or the medical examiner general, whatever you call it, to tour with them and to go to conferences, other conferences, to talk about how safe tasers are. So they've infiltrated the medical community, especially at the medical examiner, where the coroners are having to rule these things as death or not death. Back in the day, they were actually starting to rule these things, rule tasers as a primary or contributing cause of death on the medical reports. They would get a phone call, and they would get threatened, and then it became where every time there was a death...
Who was getting... from the Taser company or from...
Taser International. Steve Tuttle would make a phone call and talk about lawsuits with these folks. We've had some whistleblowers speak to that. And then it would be any time there was a death, they would just preemptively call that coroner before they ever even saw the body and talk to them about the lawsuits. So you saw fewer and fewer medical examiners ruling this as a cause of death, and then what you saw just a couple years ago, this new wave of excited delirium being the cause of death. And now we have this behavior, this physiological behavior of sorts that's being marketed, so to speak, as an actual medical condition or an actual medical failure of the body. Instead of it's a way to say that taser didn't have anything to do with the cause of death, that somehow whatever other elements were involved, if there was drug use or, you know, what other conditions medically this person had, that contributed to this other condition called excited delirium. Somehow the taser had nothing to do with this excited delirium, even though perhaps a drug user that might have been an addict would have, every day for several years been using that same drug. As soon as you enter taser to the equation, they die. But somehow taser has nothing to do with it. It's very curious.
Where do we stand now? And I'm asking this from the standpoint of, you know, we have a new Obama administration. Here in Texas, I just came from your capital, and you have folks that are on the case lobbying and trying to get laws changed. And, you know, this is where all the activity happens in this part of the country right now, because it happens every 18 months. So is there a national fight? Is there a state-by-state fight? I know that there's been that lawsuit that came out of California, $1.4 million. But is that enough, and is that enough to change the procedures?
It's a fight that is going to have to be fought on many different fronts, and is being done so. That lawsuit does set a persuasive precedent for other district courts to rule similarly. But we need people that are brave to bring that up, people, the victims, to bring their cases forward for that to happen.
When that happens, do they try to settle and knock this out of court before this happens, or try to, you know, find some other things to bring them up on?
That's exactly what happens. They settle time and again, and they threaten those folks that are suing them with high bills that they're not going to be able to pay if they appeal and all of that. So they say, we win time and again, so you know, they scare them into settling, and people do settle. But if you look at the settlements, when they're paying out millions of dollars to people, they're budgeting millions and millions of dollars every year for these settlements and lawsuits. And the fact that they're planning to be sued tells you something a little bit about that company. But they do settle. It's unfortunate that that happens. We need people to rally around those folks from the community to support them and help them along. While we're fighting this in the courts, we need to fight this in our legislative assemblies, both at the local, state, and national level. I don't think, and I haven't seen any sign yet, that this new Obama administration is going to pursue in any way some sort of change in police practices as far as police practices go. I wish that were not the case, but, you know, with the pressure from the grassroots, we can do that. And the other thing is there's lawsuits coming from the police themselves against Taser International. If people knew about that, they would be armed with this information.
Why are the police suing?
Well, the police, up until recently, it was common practice for them to be tased in their training so they know what it would feel like. And they would actually only have a test mode applied to them, which is about 1.5 seconds, and it's actually a lower amperage. It's a lot safer. Still, it hurts like all get out, and still, nonetheless, even with all of the, you know, with being supported and having it being a controlled environment and less time and less amperage, still medical problems have occurred, and there's been injuries and psychological problems and things like that. So they have suffered medically from the effects of that one tiny little tasering that they've had. To have any other officer or any other law enforcement official or a taser lobbyist say that the police love them, wrong. There's some police that do not. And in fact, there has been a suicide and a couple of people, of law officers, quitting across the nation because they thought the taser they were using against somebody was non-lethal, when in fact it killed somebody. So they quit law enforcement altogether, and in one case, somebody committed suicide.
In Texas, what's the deal with the tasers? Because there's been a number of deaths right here in the Lone Star State.
Yeah, we've had close to 25 deaths in Texas. I guess Florida's first, California second, Texas is third in deaths, not only in numbers, actually, that's proportionately. We're going to fight this time, perhaps, and I'm not sure yet, perhaps as in the schools, from keeping law enforcement officers from bringing them and using them against the children in public school systems.
Is that happening?
They do. Now, most of the big cities have policies in place that they don't carry them in elementary and junior high schools, but that's not statewide, and it's common practice for them to carry them in the high schools, and we want to see that go away. There's so many stories across the nation. A law enforcement officer trying to get to two boys fighting and tasering a girl that just was in the way. You know, you can't taser people for getting in your way. This is a potentially lethal weapon. I mean, it's bad enough that they're tasering people who aren't complying with them verbally or are asking questions.
You know, for people who don't understand, the way this often happens, what leads up to a taser, isn't necessarily a physical confrontation. It might be I get pulled over at night. Officer comes over and, you know, talks rude to me. Pull out your wallet. And I'm like, officer, why do I need to pull out my wallet? Not going to tell you again. Pull out your wallet. Again, talking rudely to me. Well, officer, can you change your tone of voice? You know, talk nicely. And all of a sudden, I may find myself on the receiving end of a taser. And this is kind of, is this within the best practices? Or how does this work? Because you hear this over and over again, that you're having a verbal back and forth, not even a hostile one, and people are getting tased without warning.
Absolutely. I said Snelling about that here in Austin, actually, on Thanksgiving Day of 2006, traveling with his mother, I believe, to family's dinner. On Mopac, was pulled over for going a few miles over the speed limit, and that very pretty much how you described just happened. And of course, he was black and the officer was white, and within seconds for asking questions of the officer. He was being tased and on the, you know, out of his car and on the ground. Luckily, our new police chief that came in the summer of 2007 wanted to make a big splash with the community and show what a great guy he was. He used this video as an example of what not to do.
Wait, they had a video of this, that's right.
From the car, yes. So it was videotaped. So he used this video and made his own video and said, ask yourself three questions. One being, do you want to have your family treated this way? And the other being, of course, you know, what do you think is going to happen to you if, in fact, you do something like this in the future, knowing that I'm making this video now? So he used this as an example of what not to do. And
Has it worked here in Texas, or at least in Austin?
It definitely made an impact. It definitely did. And I'd like to see more of that done across the nation.
Two last questions before we let you go. First, are tasers being used by criminals against ordinary citizens? How pervasive is that? And then my last question is, what are the marching orders for everybody listening?
It's not pervasive yet, but it is starting to happen, and they are getting more and more prevalent and into the hands of individuals. Now, of course, law enforcement, lobbyists are responding, trying to make laws to curb buying and usage of tasers by individuals, by the general public. And in fact, there's a new Kevlar vest in development right now that's thicker so that the probes won't go through their vests when the public tries to use it on them. Marching orders is to organize locally. Your best bet is to prevent your department from getting them, but if they already have them in hand, you can curb policy. There's a lot of juice out there. If you go to stoptasers.org, there's information about how to do that. Also look at Truth Not Tasers and read, keep in touch with that blog spot that tells you a lot of the latest info, and you can see the list of deaths there, and you can look at how many deaths have happened in your community.
We've been talking with Debbie Russell. She's an activist here in Austin, Texas. She's been on the front line dealing with the taser situation, taser death that have been taking place all over the country. Here in Texas, more than 25. In San Jose, which kind of sparked this conversation, there's been six since 2005, including one on just the other week, Richard Lua. We appreciate the information, Debbie. Thank you so much. And we're going to remind people that this is something that we just can't sweep under the rug. A simple conversation, a simple back and forth with an officer, meaning that you have questions as to why you got pulled over, may get you tased. Maybe you don't care, but what if it's your mom? What if it's your younger brother and sister? And more people are being killed, not just from the probes and the reaction to it, but oftentimes, and we didn't really talk about it, but also because of how they're positioned. So some people are getting tased and falling on their head, and it's a night for them. You know, they're getting tased and falling off of a ledge or wherever they're standing. So these things are something we need to keep in mind, and we appreciate the conversation. We're out for now. Peace.